Welcome to the Mandalorian podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial podcast for the Outer Rim. My name is Matt, and joining me in the co-pilot seat is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Better than being frozen in carbonite, Matt. How are you? Excited today to talk about the Mandalorian panel at D23.
Indeed, Pete, two kind of Star Wars slices given to us at D23. One was at the Disney Plus portion, where they talked about Mandalorian. And then also at the Walt Disney Studios movies panel, there was some Star Wars discussion there as well. Pete, we're lumping it all together here, starting with that D23 portion on August 23rd. And Kathleen Kennedy took the stage, noting that Disney Plus will be home to over 40 years of Star Wars storytelling all in one place.
They have really ratcheted up the, not only the advertising, but really just the dominant place they're going to have in streaming. And when you consider that, as we're talking right now, the clock is ticking on the 3-year D23 pay up front, 140 and change deal for Disney Plus, and the number of people I know that have signed up for that. It's going to be fascinating to see if they pull an anti-Netflix and say, yeah, 2 million people signed up for this deal. So we've got 2 million subscribers guaranteed for the next 3 years, locked in on this rate, and then you do the money of what they would have done, and then they go out and buy everything on Wednesday of this coming week.
Oh, I think that, I mean, look, Netflix does not share numbers on viewing. Netflix's stock is driven by those subscriber numbers that it does report quarterly in the financial blah, blah, blahs. Disney is coming off a down quarter where it took a bigger hit from the Fox stuff than it was planning, and theme park attendance was down. Some of it Star Wars related. We'll talk about that later in this podcast, or some of it potentially Star Wars related. You can bet for sure that whatever those subscriber numbers are when they do the next quarterly call, which I think the most recent one was in the last 2 or 3 weeks, so, you know, in about a quarter, you can bet they're going to tout those numbers if they're good. So the fact that there was this D23 only deal to get the 3 years up front locked in at less than $4 a month, then they extended it to D23 members, including people on the free end, but then didn't talk about it for like 5 days. There was no Disney press on that. It was all word of mouth, and it was all, hey, there's this thing you can do. And people were going out and selling Disney Plus to fellow fans without Disney Plus or Disney doing any marketing. It's astonishing. The last couple of days, they have tweets on it and this and that, the other, but it's astonishing the route that they took.
And while so much, I think, of that, you know, subscribing ahead of time, I mean, here we're, you know, I have the thing up on the other page here, Matt, 71 days, 13 hours, 8 minutes, and 35 seconds. While so much of that content coming is going to be on the Marvel side, let's remember where they're starting. They're starting with The Mandalorian, something that continues to get increasingly favorable press and reviews. I've not seen the whole pilot, but I've seen enough to know that they have really squared it up. The trailer that they released there does everything and nothing at the same time, which is exactly what they needed to do. And they are building this service around The Mandalorian to begin.
And part of that Star Wars conversation there about D23 leading into The Mandalorian was this big graphic of the Star Wars timeline. Pete, new to me was the age names: Age of Republic, Age of Rebellion, Age of Resistance. Is that a new thing, or am I just not as hip as other people?
The Age of Ultron occurs much further you know, in the future. Remember, we're in a galaxy far, far away a long time ago. Okay, so they went with ours and that they're doing it this way. It's just that was really, you know, Matt gets a little befuddled sometimes when there's a little too much exposition. But you got to remember, there were people who were legitimately confused for Solo, A Star Wars Story. Why is Rey with young Han Solo on the Falcon and Chewbacca with young Lando? I don't know what's going on right now, 5 months after another Star Wars movie came out. So to make it abundantly clear and to help people understand, we're going to be telling stories in a variety of different timelines. Really necessary when you continue to think of the number of things they still have coming that aren't, you know, fully cemented, fully formed at this point.
Well, in that Age of the Republic and in the D23 panel, the reminder that all of Clone Wars, including the incomplete final season to be completed, that'll be arriving on the service February 2020. There also was the reminder of untitled Cassian Andor prequel co-starring K2. It still is a thing, even though it feels like it was announced for forever. It was announced forever ago, and there still isn't a date and things like that.
They're getting ready to film, actually.
Well, I think, so, particularly with something like D23, you can't announce. There's only so much you can announce 2.5 years in advance when you're trying to get people to sign up for Disney Plus between now and November. Like, so even if they do, like, are they going to come out and say, oh, there's a this, and then we're going to go to Morocco, and then we're eyeing, you know, spring 2020. Like, no, it's kind of, hey, this is a thing. Quick, shuffle them off stage because we need to now talk about The Mandalorian. And Pete, let's talk a little bit about that new trailer that was shown at D23.
Well, the idea, too, that I think made it a lot easier for people to sign up for this service ahead of time, beyond, of course, The Mandalorian, is just how much content they're eventually going to have coming. This not taking into account, of course, Disney's vast library catalog of things that they own that will be no place else. So when we bring in The Mandalorian, the sizzle of the new thing you haven't seen yet, which is so much like the thing you've seen before that you love, but different enough and of a little bit of a different tone, you know, to the point where we were even speculating on Twitter, disintegrations, no disintegrations. I don't know.
I think ultimately that's the line that the trailer is walking in terms of saying, hey, adults, this is the Star Wars Western you've always dreamed of. Hey, did you see the guy get squished slashed in the door as the portal door thing slices him up? But of course, it's not going to be R-rated. You know, it's not going to be the R-rated Star Wars fanfic you've always wanted. I'll mention, this might sound like a tangent or out of nowhere, but I saw a stat, I think I tweeted about it. There have been 2 G-rated movies released in wide release this past year. One was Toy Story 4, the other was one of the Disney nature movies. You know, so like, what used to be G is now PG. What used to be PG is now PG-13. I think we can live in this family-friendly area of, you know, like, for example, Pete, I know there's footage in The Mandalorian of one of those, who's Jabba the Hutt's little hee-hee-hee guy?
Salacious Crumb, Matt.
There you go. There's one of the Salacious Crumb race, you know, that's on a spit getting roasted.
A monkey lizard?
Well, there you go. And it's like, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is this. That's both like cutting edge, like, oh man, that makes me think of Salacious Crumb, who seems to be a sentient creature. Look, now he's getting roasted. And the kid's going to look at it and go, look, they eat weird lizards there. You know, so I think it could be simultaneously those things. Guy getting sliced or crunched or whatever in the door portal, you know, do you think they're going to cut him in half and there'll be digital blood everywhere as he, you know, as he with no bottom half crawls forward and, you know, yells curses? No, it's probably going to be I would bet what you saw in the preview is basically the extent of that in terms of the shot. And it's going to be bum, bum, bum music. And you go and close up on the Mandalorian's helmet as you go, oh man, he's a tough dude. You know, it's Han Solo shooting first, not, you know, Misa Jar Jar Binks kind of stuff. But that still is Star Wars appropriate.
The look of it is Rogue One and Return of the Jedi had a baby without dialogue. you've got Death Troopers in there. You know, you've got the Mandalorian. We still haven't, apart from, you know, some leaked footage, seen him speak, heard him speak. We haven't seen him without the helmet off. Will he even take the helmet off, Matt? Is Pedro Pascal even under the helmet? But it's tantalizing. And, you know, you get Giancarlo Esposito, ex of Breaking Bad, still of Better Call Saul, a little show that we did in the proto Fantastic Geek days, which shall not be named. but, you know, the necessary menace. There's an Ugnaught character you see on a lizard that doesn't talk, but I can tell you that's Nick Nolte's character. So you can have Nick Nolte as a motion capture, small, angry, industrial person we've seen in Cloud City. So, you know, it does everything it needed to do. And like I said, let's be honest. The drive to subscribe to Disney Plus has not solely been fueled by this show, but make no mistake, it is the thing at the start that people will be there for. And, you know, given that we do The Mandalorian, we do the Star Wars films for our pop culture podcasts, etc., but, you know, we do all the Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff, you know, really hits the center of the target for us and I think a whole lot of geeks out there.
Pete, what do you think had a bigger budget? The 8 episodes of The Mandalorian or the Martin Scorsese movie coming to Netflix? Let me throw a number out there, Pete. One of those two had a budget of $120 million.
I'm going to say, because of what I've heard of the amount of digital work and the salaries involved, I'm going to say that the Netflix offering is higher.
Martin Scorsese's The Irishman, a 2-hour movie coming to Netflix, cost $200 million. Yeah. The Mandalorian's 8 episodes budgeted at $120 million. That's $15 million per episode, by the way, Pete. That may be in excess of what was spent for Game of Thrones prior to its latter seasons and the intentionally longer episodes and blah, blah, blah. But like, you're getting, I mean, $120 million movie, that's a little low for Star Wars, but not impossibly so. To treat this as an 8-hour long Star Wars movie that you get week after week after week for 8 weeks, I mean, it's just an insane proposition.
It is. And, you know, this is not to beat Netflix up. They do a fine job of that themselves right now, but the bloom has been off the rose for a while, and now it's really, really apparent. Yes, they're getting all of these, you know, will be in theaters and then hits your Netflix 3 weeks later so that they're going to be eligible and not step on toes for, you know, the super artistic film types when it comes to Oscars, you know, between The Irishman, between The Two Popes, which just threw out its first trailer the other day. But at the same time, this move to do more of these super big budget, super acclaim films and then get them to Netflix as quick as possible. And let's be honest, there are going to be people who go and see it in a movie theater so that they can see it 3 weeks ahead of time. And then there's going to be people who, wait, why am I going to go see this on a Friday when I wait 3 weeks and get it on the thing I already pay for? When you have The Mandalorian, when you have the entire Disney vault to play with and all these other properties they have forthcoming, you know, I think the Netflix people will acknowledge, yeah, we have our first real competitor ever.
Well, Pete, sticking with The Mandalorian, to what I think was universal surprise, and we'll dig into how this possibly could be in mere moments, but mentioned at the Disney Legends induction, mentioned as Ming-Na Wen was inducted as a Disney legend for her contributions to being the voice of Mulan, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., etc. Also mentioned, Pete, Ming-Na Wen in The Mandalorian. How can this be, Pete?
It's amazing that this was able to not be leaked to this point, which brings speculation on our end that it doesn't happen until much later in the series. Is it a guest starring role? Is it something that, as her role in season 7 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the final season coming next summer, which is now wrapped, you know, is it something that's going to become her regular gig? They are moving on season 2 of The Mandalorian quite quickly right now. So very, very interesting. And the speculation over who she may play is even more tantalizing.
In my mind, it's one of two options. One is, as you said, Pete, if she appears via live action, then it's towards the end of the season, or they've kind of judiciously shot scenes where it's like, in this scene, Mr. Pascal, you're going to be saying your lines opposite the script supervisor who's going to wear a dark wig today and be shot over the shoulder. And in 6 months' time, we're going to shoot Ming-Na Wen, or we're going to shoot whoever, if they were eyeing Ming-Na Wen or whatever. You know, we're going to shoot her side of it later on. Second option is, Pete, could be a motion capture and or voice situation. You know, if you had talented ballet dancer doing the motion capture on set for Laser Laserson, the delicate dancer of death, and then later Ming-Na Wen comes in and, you know, does those lines at a microphone, that's possible too.
If she does not play the love child of Art Carney's character and Bea Arthur's character from the Star Wars holiday special, we riot. But I kid, of course. The hot speculation is, and really I think the hope of a lot of people, is that she could be playing Ahsoka Tano.
Yeah, I've heard that speculation too. I think that would certainly explode in the best sense. That would explode across the fandom. Also would bounce nicely into, I don't know, maybe, Pete, if there was some sort of young Ahsoka Tano prequel thing. Oh wait, there is. The Mandalorian ends on the last week in December, and then it's sometime in February when Clone Wars hits Disney Plus. You can have that synergy with a little bit of a Star Trek, Alex Kurtzman space in the middle, so you don't kind of step on too many toes. But I mean, that's the leading theory right now, right?
Whoever she plays, again, this is a Disney legend, Matt, and we don't mean to make light of that in the way that, you know, some previous Disney legends, we sat around looking at the list going back and like, all right, this guy did like some park stuff. Okay, he's a legend. Like, Ming-Na Wen has completely earned that title, and now you think of the way in which she's incorporated Star Wars into her resume after the tremendous career that she's had. She's definitely in the right category as far as age and gravitas and everything, and it's the right time frame for her to potentially play Ahsoka, whoever she plays, sure, she's going to knock it out of the park.
Well, Pete, with that, the Disney Plus portion started to wrap up. Wait a minute, Pete. Who's that coming out on stage?
Is that a hologram?
It's not a hologram. It's Ewan McGregor. Can I finally say it, Kathy? Pete, what did he weirdly top level rumor on either Deadline or Hollywood Reporter a few hours before? What's the worst kept secret in Hollywood?
That Kenobi, of course, is going to get, it won't be a film, it will be a series, which I think is the way to do it. And, you know, Matt and I have had all these conversations about all the other talent that has been in Star Wars that currently has dealings with Disney. I don't know, might reprise roles or take on roles and wind up in this series, in another series. I mean, Mandalorian is, of course, a traditional TV series from the extent of you will watch season one, they have greenlit season two, that will air, stream, etc. The Marvel ones are more of a wild card. If you think Loki is going to go 7 seasons and a movie, you just don't understand how this new Disney streamer is going to work. So the idea that Paul Bettany co-stars in the WandaVision Disney Plus streamer, and then what do you know, he's available in flashback in the Kenobi series when he was part of Crimson Dawn, and then, oh my God, it's Darth Maul, and then it's Kira, and it's all these other characters.
It is interesting to think that, you know, the rumors of Kenobi, a Star Wars story, a movie, those rumors were riding high and probably true, you know, X number of years ago. Then Solo underperformed, and I think in part of that autopsy, if nothing else, Pete, if there's this feeling, hey, we want more Star Wars, but we're not quite sure, you know, you can do the Netflix thing of saying, oh my goodness, Kenobi season 3, always planned to be the final season in a trilogy of seasons, it broke records and dazzled fans across the galaxy. Exact numbers will not be mentioned. Look, here's your own Ming-Na Wen spinoff, whatever show. Like, you get to hide imperfections if you're like, oh, this is a bet, but we as Star Wars don't want to, you know, lay another egg here. Disney Plus is the place to do it.
But Matt, do we not have Josh Trank to thank for The Mandalorian? I mean, there was a Boba Fett, a Star Wars story, ready to film. They had a script, and it is believed that was broken down, pushed to another era, reassembled, and what do you know, we've got The Mandalorian.
I mean, I guess ditto for Colin Trevorrow getting booted from episode 9, which actually is a, I didn't even mean to do this, at least not intentionally. Pete, maybe the Force moved me to do it. That's a perfect transition to talk about the Star Wars portion at the movie panel on Saturday, August 24th. But yeah, so sometimes our failures turn into successes, or sometimes failures inform how to be successful. And Kathy Kennedy saying, it all comes down to Rise of Skywalker from 1977 until this December, which I know is technically true. That, to me, that was a little hype man hype to say. I mean, again, I know it's the episode 9 in the Skywalker saga, blah, 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 but it was a bit like everything, and then after this December, nothing, except for all the things that come after it.
Right. I mean, the coyness at this point, the idea that they won't return to Rey. I mean, Daisy Ridley, I believe, is 27 or 28, that she will not reprise this role at some point, or any of them, John Boyega, you know, Oscar Isaacs, whomever, is laughable to think. And all right, this idea of a 9 episode cycle, you know, a beginning, a middle, and an end. We started with the middle. We went to the really not as great beginning. And now we're in a monetarily and, you know, fairly critically successful end point of these of a trilogy. I don't know what the word is for a nine nine movie cycle, but you know, there's all this pushback that these movies aren't successful and, you know, people don't want to see these. Yet what happened when the footage went wide on Monday morning? Everybody's talking about it. You know, you've got Rey with a flip out double-sided lightsaber in a dark hood with Sith eyes, and people are like, oh my God. And it just shows you how Star Wars continues to be a cornerstone of what Disney has.
It is interesting too, and I'll tread lightly here, but it's interesting the return, JJ returning, and he was at the movie panel. He said we don't have a full trailer yet, et cetera, et cetera. But JJ returning kind of has become this vessel for some of the anti Ryan Johnson people to be like, you know, even though I protested episode 7, JJ is now my new safe haven to return to. Whatever. How about this, Pete? There was a touching story of J.J. Abrams being thanked by Carrie Fisher in her autobiography for working with him 2 times. They had only worked together the 1 time. He told this story as a little way of saying that maybe she was kind of presaging his return for episode 9. When I first heard about this story, I was like, all right, this is an over-the-top, silly anecdote. But I think it kind of... it played in a way that was really heartfelt and sweet.
And they continue to say that she, Carrie Fisher's performance, is the emotional backbone of this film. This final movie of the trilogy was always conceived as hers. Each of the films really having the shadow of one of the legacy characters, of course, Han in the first one, Luke in the second one. And it really remains to be seen, other than, you know, the recobbled footage that they've done, and they've worked with her brother very, very closely as far as permission and, you know, getting looks of things and, you know, really representing the estate, as well as Billy Lord, her daughter, who is in the film, to do it in a tasteful way. Because when she passed away and they were off cycle, it was Rogue One that was just out. It was almost immediate. We are not going to do digital stuff. And from what I understand at this point, they're taking alternate takes. They're taking anything they have. They're repurposing outfits, et cetera, et cetera. And they've created, you know, this actress from beyond the grave, and it's going to be interesting to see how much of the film she's in terms of you know, amount when it comes to minutes, and again that underlying effect, that undertow that she's going to have for a female protagonist as they finish up her journey.
And I think that, as you know, when we see the movie, obviously everyone will be conscious of everything you just described there, Pete. And I think, similar to Furious 7, this movie will get a little bit of a pass in terms of, you know, if it's like, oh man, they cut away halfway through the dialogue, I bet that was a, you know, recorded dialogue from another thing, or a voice actress, or like, nobody asked for this. Just as with Furious 7, no one asked for Paul Walker to, you know, to pass away partway through it.
Right. So, but I think that's the big difference. They made this film start to finish after her death, and they had struggled so with the decision of what to do. of whether to retain that idea. You know, you mentioned the idea of Colin Trevorrow, somebody who's gone on record and said that, you know, well, female directors just don't want to direct these big budget movies, which is beyond laughable.
Action movies, yeah.
What's that?
Big budget action movies.
Yeah, and what do you know? His female boss had something to say about that, moron. And you know, JJ got this started. For JJ to come back, JJ to have this, you know, tremendous relationship, and he's old school Hollywood with his dad and his time in the business and everything like that. You know, it just makes sense. There's the symmetry to it. And, you know, to craft her role in this movie completely with her gone, and to, rather than what you're saying, to take a, you know, oh, he looked away here and we can't do a pickup because obviously the actor's no longer with us. Everything that they did here was, here's what we have. Create the movie around what we have, instead of, here's the movie. It is unfinished, and we can only go with what is left.
I think it's a great distinction that you've made there, Pete. In some other Star Wars news, of course, Star Wars Land, aka Galaxy's Edge, has been open in Disneyland. It opened this past week in Walt Disney World. By the way, Pete, just in case you wanted to know which age it was taking place in, okay, it did. Galaxy's Edge did appear on the age graphic that Kathleen Kennedy put up.
It's, they have a novel. Resistance. I mean, the content knows no bounds when it comes to the multimedia. So that Black Spire Outpost is part of the canon, Matt. Can we say it now?
Yeah.
You know, Batu. I mean, who knows when the Mandalorian touches down there? And look, you can have breakfast with the Mandalorian and get closed in a door, just like one of his unlucky people, or frozen in carbonite.
Certainly, buzz about the theming is good. I think most people feel that the land underwhelms a little bit with just the Millennium Falcon ride. Out currently, the other ride, the landmark ride, the ride, Pete, that expectations are it should equal or surpass Flight of Passage. That's your Pandora Avatar ride. Rise of the Resistance will open on December 5th in Walt Disney World and in the new year in Disneyland. So I feel like once that opens, you'll be able to say, fine, there's the bars, there's the shopping, there's the theming, there's the different corners. Here's the Resistance Edge. Here's the First Order Edge. Here's the great, you know, Parade of the Stormtroopers, etc. But when you have both of those rides open, that should be that all-encompassing experience. And then I think Galaxy's Edge will be able to be properly ascertained.
Well, let's not leave out the hotel experience, which is coming, and apparently expensively so. When Fantastic Geek is going to hit it up. But, you know, so much has been made of the rollout in Disneyland and then this sky is falling nonsense that nobody's going. Well, they've been super smart about limiting the hours and the access so that it's not wall-to-wall people, you know, ripping landing struts off the Millennium Falcon because they can't get in, and it's a confined space. And now that they've opened on both coasts here, and what do you know, Matt? There were people, including friend of the podcast, Greg Gear, who were lined up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they capped the park at 10 o'clock in the morning and had a tremendous time. Great word of mouth. All right, they didn't open with their flagship ride. I kind of prefer the way they've started here, give people the taste, and then you're going to give them the reason to come back. But that's coming. That continues to get very, very good buzz going forward. And I think people are largely very, very happy with it. There are the naysayers. Oh, you should have said it in the original trilogy. Well, you know, those people are a little bit older. If you know anything about the theme parks, they try to cater, obviously, to the younger clientele who will be bringing people there much longer than the people who started with the original trilogy as they're entering nursing homes.
Also, I genuinely believe, Pete, there is such a thing as going, you can be going to Disney parks too much. And here's when it becomes too much. When, you know, the fact that the food and wine thing, the fact that the Morocco cart doesn't have those crusties that you like anymore. Oh, now it's not even worth going. Oh, the fact, right? The fact that, you know what, the Hondo animatronic in line for the Millennium Falcon ride, it's not as good as the priestess in the Avatar boat ride. It's like, this is a place to go and have fun. And if you're not having fun, you know, like I've my daughter's 8. I've gone to Disney World a number of times since she turned 4. And I'm very aware that at a certain point you're like, yeah, if I do, we did Pirates of the Caribbean twice during this trip. She's 8. Now we've been on Pirates of the Caribbean 6 times. Guess what? I'm sabotaging my own pixie dust here. I'm taking away the magic here. If the expectation is I need to go to Galaxy's Edge on launch day on my park of choice, and it needs to be the same as when I was 6 years old watching the speeder chase in a theater in 1983, watching Return of the Jedi, and if it's anything less than that, then this is a complete failure. Like, it's two rides, it's some dining, it's some shopping. It should be immaculately themed. It should blow you away.
By all accounts, the people who have gone there with an open mind, not, you know, Rian Johnson ruined my childhood and the childhood of millions of others when he blew up Alderaan, you know, those naysayers have appreciated and enjoyed. And there's the new aspect. And then there's the thing that remains familiar and indelible about Star Wars. And what you mentioned too, in terms of the guest experience, and there are the people, there's the D23s, there's the Disneyana of, you know, I live in state and I go there all the time, et cetera, et cetera. And there's always going to be a place for that. But the truly special aspect of it, you know, I honeymooned in Disney. It was the last time I was there in 2000 and 2001. We got married on December 30th, 2000. So to think that when I go next, I'll be able to go to Star Wars Land, something that probably should have been made well before, given their association and given, you know, Star Tours opening in 1987. I remember getting to that 2 years later, and what a wonderful experience that was to ride a Star Wars ride then, and the number of iterations that's gone through. And now you have this, and that's why I want to get, you know, I'm going to do the whole, I think Matt and I have committed to doing this together at this point, doing the entire experience, the super expensive hotel stay, the park experience. We're going to Westworld this thing up, as we say around Fantastic Geek headquarters. And, you know, they're laughing to the bank right now.
I mean, since you bring up the Star Wars hotel, we'll just add in our increasingly expansive Star Wars coverage here. The hotel is going to have the theme of a space liner, a Galactic Star Cruiser. In fact, the name of the hotel is Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser. So the idea is that you check into the hotel, but that now you're on the Star Cruiser. And it's also, Pete, a two-night minimum, or even a two-night maximum, depending on how immersive that storyline is going to be. If they have like a nailed in, you know, day one, day two, day three storyline, which
they have been rehearsing the story branches for some time. And, you know, there are things that are currently going on in the park that will evolve onto the hotel and the hotel experience. But, you know, there's nothing that exists like this. And this is the IP to do it around. I mean, it's come out in the last week as well, but you know, plans are further down the road, that there'll be an Avengers campus eventually at Disney as well. But, you know, from Avatar to this, and this is the Golden Goose.
Absolutely. So certainly exciting times in the galaxy far, far away, whether you're talking Disney Plus, or whether you're talking theaters, whether you're talking the theme park experience. And I mean, Pete, I'm smiling from ear to ear here. I can't wait to dive on into all of this. The only problem is it's not November, it's not December, and it's not whenever the hotel opens.
Only 70-odd some days, Matt, until The Mandalorian.
That is true. And Pete, as we count down, all of this made possible by the people who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek, making sure that we continue to, play in all these different pools of increasingly Disney goodness.
Every contribution gets yourself access to exclusive podcast content. It takes just a dollar to get in that door. And then there's all sorts of levels. There's the Go on the Galactic Cruiser with Fantastic Geek level that we will create just for you. Welcome you to our cabin.
Yeah, that might be just an open invite to anybody who to anybody who can save up enough space bucks. But Pete, that's a discussion for, you know, 2 years down the line when it opens. How can people be in touch with you to talk about Star Wars?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 10,612 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek with the PH, all one word, like it today.
Well, Pete, for those listening on the Pop Culture Podcast feed, we will be back tomorrow to talk Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and more Disney Plus shows. With that, I will say Dewanawanga to all you listeners out there and give you, Pete, the final word.
Lightspeed to Endor.